This isn't just a game, it's a once-in-a-generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters 100-year tour. Celebrate 100 years of high-flying dunks, 100 years of show-stopping moves, and 100 years of changing the game. Bring the whole family and be part of the legacy. This game is once in a century. Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to harlemglobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.
Welcome back to the Bonfire Podcast, where we talk about the UFC and mixed martial arts with those closest to the fight game. I am your host, longtime MMA reporter and MMA junkie senior reporter, Mike Bon. Hope everyone enjoyed the final UFC fight week of 2025. The schedule is now over. The ESPN era is now over, and no time to waste here. We are back with our second annual UFC championship draft. Wanted to give you guys an episode before I leave. For my honeymoon, when you are listening to this, I will be on a beach somewhere, and I want to give that little piece of content and a little gift for you guys as we get into this long holiday break between UFC events, of course. Still some mixed martial arts and notable mixed martial arts at that happening between now and when the UFC resumes on January 24th, but before all that begins, we had to get back with this championship draft because it was oh so enjoyable last year. And listening back to the episode Dean Thomas and I did last January, so much has changed. Some things have stayed the same, but fascinating to go down memory lane, see who did best in selecting which UFC champions would make it through the year, because there was certainly not many. And then we are going to look ahead and make our draft choices for this 2026 crop of champions. So a lot of fun. One of my favorite shows ever. I think this is going to be a great tradition and piece of this program every year going forward. So that is all from me. Please like, rate, subscribe, follow, all that stuff. It is much appreciated, and enjoy after this break the UFC 2026 championship draft with Dean Thomas. We're back now on the Bonfire for the second annual UFC championship draft here with Dean Thomas. Dean, we did this last year predicting 2025. We're going to do it again with 2026. It shaked out very interesting. Can't wait to go through the results and everything. But first of all, how are you doing?
I'm good, man. I'm just getting back from the fight night last night, the final ESPN show. So that was good. But I'm excited to do this draft. I can't believe it's been a year, and I'm curious to know how I did last year.
Yes. We will find out in short order here. What was it like on Saturday? Obviously, end of an era with ESPN. Is everyone, you know, giving each other hugs and crying? I know it was like, I felt like UFC 323 was more of that because it's the bigger event. This is just like an Apex card, so I'm sure maybe not as many executives and things like that. But
no, it wasn't as many executives, but it felt like the production kind of treated it that way. There was a sense of closure in a way. Like it felt like a TV show being done, like the final episode of Fresh Prince. Like there was a sense of that in the air last night. But for me, I'm like, hey, when's the next show? 6 weeks. But it was bittersweet. You know, we're very happy with what ESPN did with it, but excited for the future.
Yeah, well, this break will give us time to kind of look back at this final year of the ESPN deal. Everyone's going to be doing their awards and recaps and everything. We're doing a little bit of that now, looking back and looking ahead. I'll give to start out as we kind of recap the 2025 championship year. I'll give you some numbers and statistics of what we got here. So there was 21 UFC title fights in 2025. Three of them ended in a knockout or TKO, one of those being the injury TKO between Joshua Van and Alexandre Pantoja. Four ended in a submission, 13 ended in a decision, and one ended in a no contest there. So the quickest result was Pantoja versus Van, 26 seconds. You take that out, the fastest title fight was Alex Pereira beating Magomed Ankalaev in their rematch at UFC 320. So anything stand out from you there, Dean? I mean, obviously many more decisions compared to finishes, and actually surprised me that there was more submissions and not than knockouts.
That's surprising. That's surprising in a game where we rarely see submissions anymore at all. Mm-hmm. So for that to happen, four of them in title fights in a year seems alarming. And that, I mean, it's good for me, but it just seems, it almost doesn't seem real. The 13 decisions seem real to me.
Yeah.
And not because, like, looking back, thinking of all the decisions, it's just you think when you're talking about the two best fighters of a division fighting for that prize, that they're going to fight with everything they have, and it's going to be hard to finish it in 25 minutes.
Totally. Two of those submissions came on the same night at UFC 316, with Merab submitting Sean O'Malley and Kayla Harrison submitting Juliana Pena. So there was a little cluster there of those ones. But of those 21 title fights, Dean, 10 resulted in title defenses successful by the champion. 8 saw titles change hands inside the octagon. So a challenger beat the standing champion. 3 saw new champions crowned in vacant title fights, fighting for vacant belts. And overall, we got 12 new undisputed champions crowned in 2025. That is a single year record, beating the 10 that were crowned in 2016. 11 of those happened inside the cage. 1 was Tom Aspinall being upgraded from interim champion to undisputed champion.
So that, again, is surprising to me. You said it was 10 defenses and then 8 new champions?
Yeah, yes. 11 new champions technically, but 3 of those were...
But 8 champions, right, for sure. So yeah, that's also surprising to me. Like, those numbers aren't... There's no real true discrepancy in that. So that's... It's so difficult to predict because, I would like to know of those numbers, like, who was the favorite, how many of the favorites won as champ. Like, so it's just very difficult to predict these fights. I mean, Mike, you know, I'm so bad. I feel like I'm so bad at it, but I think so. One show I'll go 1-5. The next show I'll go 4-1. Sometimes I'll go 0-5, and sometimes 5-0. But I think it always averages out to about 10-8. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. It always averages out to about 500 for me.
Yeah. It's I was holding the lead in the MMA Junkie staff predictions through the whole year. We just do the main card, and then, like, I think I slipped up big at UFC Qatar, went like 1-5 or something, and then I've lost my lead and not going to get that staff pick title. So yeah, it's tough. I'll quickly read through those results of the 11 new champions title changes. For Megabed Ankalaev defeating Alex Pereira, UFC 313. Jack Del Maddalena defeats Bilal Muhammad, UFC 315. Kayla Harrison defeats Juliana Pena, UFC 316. Hamzat Chimaev defeats Trickus Duplessis, UFC 319. Alex Pereira defeats Megabed Ankalaev in the rematch, UFC 320. Islam Makhachev defeats Jack Del Maddalena, UFC 322. For the welterweight belt, Joshua Van defeats Alexandre Pantoja, UFC 323. And Piotr Jan defeats Merab Dvalishvili, UFC 323. And then the 3 vacant title fights, Alexander Volkanovski defeating Diego Lopez at UFC 314. Ilya Topuria defeats Charles Oliveira, UFC 317. For the lightweight belt, and then Mackenzie Dern defeats Virna Zhangiroba, UFC 321. So that is the bow on those title fight results from 2025, Dean. Now let's get into how we did on our draft predictions here and how that all went down, because it was quite interesting. You had the first overall pick in the draft, and you selected Islam Makhachev. But the odd caveat here was that it was to
wrong
be
division
champion and not welterweight. So we, interesting, listening back to that, we essentially were like, we did mention welterweight. Could he go up? But we were thinking he was still going to keep the lightweight belt and he wasn't going to have to vacate. Because I think at the beginning of this year, this whole new mindset of everyone's having to vacate wasn't really there. So I don't really know how to judge this one, whether to give you points, half points.
No, you can't, because that wasn't the thing.
Yeah.
Right. So. Because if you give me credit on that, then yeah, it wasn't the thing. So yeah, you can't give me credit on that.
Okay, so we'll take your judgment on that. Nevertheless, he is a UFC champion, so fair enough. My first overall pick was Tom Aspinall at the heavyweight division, and this was very interesting to listen back, Dean. I will play the clip here of our brief sliver of our discussion here about why I picked Tom Aspinall first and what you said in response to my reasoning. To say the heavyweight champion at the end of the year is going to be Tom Aspinall, and I do think there's obviously a few ways this could happen, right? He could either not fight John Jones, John retires, and he's just upgraded
to the Undisputed Champion. He could fight John and win, of course, and become the Undisputed Champion. Or I think could see a scenario where he fights John, loses, John retires, and then Aspinall at the end of the year is fighting for the vacant belt against whoever makes sense. So I think there's multiple paths where Tom could hold this belt, even if he wins a fight, even if he loses a fight. I just feel like John Jones, and I'm curious to see where either of us pick him in our draft here, is unlikely to hold that belt at the end of the year, whether it's circumstantial or his own choice.
You know what's crazy about this is that I don't think that John's going to be much of a factor. I don't think John really fights. I don't think it happens. I really don't think it happens. You know, I know he threw out the number 30 million. I think the UFC would call his bluff on that. I think the UFC would be like, all right, we'll give you 30 million. What you want to do? And John will probably be like, well, we got to do it at a different date. Then he'll get hurt. I just don't see it happen. I think there's just too many circumstances and obstacles that can get in the way of a John Jones Tom Aspinall fight.
Wow.
Bingo.
Look at that.
I finally got one right.
No, you got a few right, but no, one. Dude, sharp.
That one, yeah.
We were sharp on that one for sure. Yeah. And I think that first scenario I laid out where, of course, Tom does not fight John. John retires and he's upgraded is what ended up being the reality there. So I feel pretty good. I feel like I got full points for that first overall pick there. And that was a pretty strong choice.
So Tom is still the champ currently. Okay, because – you know, the weird things happen and I'm surprised. Yeah. So still the champ. All right.
Still the champ. Yep. Okay. So your number two pick, and very similar to your number one pick, you selected Ilia Topuria to remain featherweight champion of the UFC. And you did have a quote on there where you said, we discussed the possibility of him moving up to lightweight. You said he would be crazy to give up that belt and move up without the guarantees of pay-per-view points and being a challenger and all that stuff. And he did it, but I think you were half right in the sense that he went up for a vacant belt, not to challenge for the standing champions. So that was an interesting one. But again, you don't give yourself any points.
No points on that. Can't give myself points.
My second pick on my team was Alexandre Pantoja. That was going pretty good up until one of the last fights of the year. That was a tough one. We thought he was going to have very good success throughout the year. Interesting enough, though, when we were talking about him in the flyweight division, neither one of us once in this entire podcast mentioned the name Joshua Van.
Who would have thought? I mean, he was, when we did the podcast, he might not even have been ranked.
He was not. And that's, that shows how crazy things can go.
He had just probably lost to Charles Johnson like a few weeks before. So, but again, how weird the game is. Like Pantoja, in a logical sense, should still be champ. Like in my head, he should have beat Joshua Van and he would still be champ. So that was still a great call.
Yeah, it was a close one. Interesting, you did say that you thought Manal Kopp was the biggest threat to Pantoja at the time. You just said he needs to keep his focus. And you talked about, you know, the advice you gave him in the cage that people were wondering about and all that stuff. And look where he is, the final fight.
Look where he is.
Huge finish of Brandon Royval and is looking very good for a title fight in 2026. So that's interesting to see how that played out. His stuff is delayed, but great mention there of Manal Kopp. Okay, you did well on this one. Your third pick at light heavyweight was Alex Pereira. So you, I think basically what you said is what was going to happen in the second, what happened in the second fight you thought was going to happen in the first. So you got there and then he was the champion. He started the year as the champion, ended it, but just had a little detour in between.
Woo, finally got one right. This is not going as bad as I thought it would have.
No,
so far anyway, yeah. Yeah.
No, you did good. We talked about him potentially moving to heavyweight. Some of the very similar stuff I'm sure we'll get into coming up with this draft since he is still the champion. Many of those same storylines still alive. So that was an interesting choice by you there. And a great one with Alex Pereira as your number three. My number three, I did well in this one too. I said Valentina Shevchenko. And I thought she was going to do well in this division. I noted, you know, Manon Fiorot is a big threat, but I felt she was going to get through it. And then, you know, we talked highly of Natalia Silva and Aaron Blanchfield and some of these other contenders at 125. No discussion about a Zhang Wally super fight at that point, though. And of course, she got that one in and won it, too.
Yeah, we couldn't have predicted it. Weili Zhang was going to move up to fight for that. So that's, again, one of them situations you just didn't see on your bingo card. Couldn't have predicted that. But Valentina still remains champ. Queen of the division.
Yeah, and I think this is maximum points of any selection here because she is the only person that started the year with the title in the same division she ended it with, right? Like, didn't lose it in between, nothing. She had the most straightforward year, and she is currently the only champion in the UFC with a title defense on her record. So
good on, hey, good on her. I love that for her.
Valentina. Okay, this is where it got really dicey, and you said as we got into this portion of the draft, I'm starting to worry that everyone we say from here on out is going to lose their next fight, and that is what ultimately ended up happening. So another good call there. So we're on the back half. You got to pick these people, but you went with Bilal Muhammad at number four, and you were pretty high on him. You know, at the time, Jack Del Maddalena was scheduled to fight Leon Edwards in London. Like, he wasn't even there for the title shot. So we were talking all about Shavkat and Ian Gary and these guys, and it plays out very differently. We end up with Islam Makhachev as welterweight champion at the end of the year.
Never saw that coming. But again, so yeah, I didn't think Bilal had the skill set to remain champ fighting those guys. Just too many different styles for him to be able to adapt to. I didn't think he'd be able to do it, and he wasn't.
Yep. For number four, I had Dricus du Plessis. I expressed strong confidence he'd be able to defeat Sean Strickland, and then I was terrified for his chances against Khamzat Chimaev. Said it felt like a coronation, that fight ended up being exactly the case. So I did not have a ton of faith in Dricus to make it through the year, but I did like his chances against Sean Strickland, so he achieved that much.
Did the fight play out as bad as you thought it would have for Dricus? Like, because I think I picked Dricus to win. Like, I had like high hopes for him to beat Khamzat. Like, I was like trying to convince myself that he could beat him, and you said that he wouldn't. So did it play out the way you thought it would?
I thought there would be probably a finish. It'd be a little more, you know, intensity in there and maybe some bigger moments. But I didn't expect it to just be the 25-minute dominance. Just that was the biggest question. Like, I don't think any of us going into that fight were picking Khamzat to win by decision, right? Like, you thought if it was going to go to the fourth, fifth round, he would gas out. And that, you know, that's when Dricus would take over and do his stuff. But no, it was one-way traffic for 25 minutes. So again, I've said this many times when talking about Khamzat's performance. You're the title challenger. His road to the belt is so difficult. You lose that fight, who knows where it goes for you. Like, the upside of grinding it out, getting the belt, getting the win, you have all the perks moving forward, outweighs doing something stupid and losing that fight. So it is what it is. We will see where he goes, and we will most certainly talk about Khamzat Chimaev and what things look like for him in 2026 coming out of this. Okay, back to you. You had at your fifth pick, John Jones. You said straight up, your reasoning was he's not going to fight in 2025, but I think the UFC is going to let him like keep the belt hostage, essentially, even though he has no desire to fight. So half right there, didn't get a fight. UFC made him give up the belt, or he relinquished it, whatever you want to call it. But someone had to pick him, so we went there.
Yeah. By default, I think I had to grab him.
You did. And yeah, these are basically all by default here. So number five, I had Zhang Weili. You thought Tatiana Suarez was going to beat her. I think I was pretty high on that too. We weren't really talking about the move up. If she did, we didn't think she was going to vacate the belt, all that stuff. So I did not see her vacating and then Mackenzie Dern swooping in as the champion there. So that was the case. And then that brings us to your last pick, Dean. And I think you might get all the points for everything on this one. Your final selection was Merab Dvalishvili, feeling the least confident he was going to get through the year as UFC bantamweight champion. This is what you had to say. Bow down to Dean for these comments.
Picking Merab.
Okay.
I'm going to pick Merab, and I hate to pick him last, but
I figured he was going to be last.
Well, here's the weird part. Here's the wrench in the equation, is that I think Merab wins against Umar.
Oh, wow. Okay.
I think Merab beats Umar. I just think that somewhere in that division, it catches up to him. Mm. I'm not sure Umar is the guy, though.
What's your path here, then? Because you think Merab beats Umar, and then next, maybe Sean O'Malley? You think Sean beats him? Or, like, is it...
No, Sean won't beat... Sean won't beat
Merab. He's already beat all the other guys out there, I feel like, after this.
I think that division is so deep and talented that there's somebody... Somebody lurking. This like, yo, by the end of the year, I'm getting my shot, and Merab gonna fight him. He gonna shock him. But there's somebody lurking in that division, because to me, 135 is always. I mean, it's kind of worked itself out these last couple of years, but it's been so deep for so long that
it's just, there's so much talent, and a lot of guys can beat each other on any given day, and it just comes down to who's more prepared in that moment. But I do think that there's somebody this year that's going to figure that out. It's not going to be O'Malley, though.
Wow, I'm so smart. I'm so brilliant.
At the buzzer, Mirab Belmush really loses the last championship fight of the year as he goes for history, pushes it maybe one step too far. I don't know if that fight's any different if he has a six-month camp as opposed to three. Maybe it doesn't matter, but he went for history. He dared to be great and do something no one has ever done in 2025, and it cost him at UFC 323 against Piotr Jan.
Yep. Like, and I said it, somebody's going to be just a little bit more prepared than he was, and that's exactly what happened. Jan was just a little bit more prepared for the moment, and he beat him.
Yeah, and that was a hot take that he was going to beat Umar. A lot of people got on you there, and he ended up doing it. So, yeah, full credit, Dean. That was a great choice for the last pick. And again, I think that who you pick at the end is just as valuable as who you pick on the top and how it looks, because we're drafting them here.
I'm saying this, though. I want my apologies in writing. It's sent to me by a raven.
There you go. We'll because, see.
Because when I say stuff, Mike, I say stuff in the moment. It always sounds crazy. And everybody, oh, Dean Thomas is crazy, stupid. But in like a year or two, it always ends up making sense.
Well, this is the show of record now. You've had some good ones that I think have aged quite well. So we'll see what else today has to bring and what happens as we look ahead to this. But as we go into the 2026 predictions here, Dean, I'm going to give you the first choice because I think you got the edge on that draft. So I think you earned it with your victory there. I will concede it. I think your Mirab take is just superior to all, and I think you deserve all the flowers for that one.
I guess... If even though we weren't giving myself credit for the Ilya and Islam, I guess if you were to even like kind of account for that, I guess I did pretty good on that. But no. All right, so I'm gonna take this and I
okay, hold on one sec. Don't go into it yet. As we go, I just need to lay it out for people quickly here. So we have 12 people to select, so six each like last year. Last year, what we did to fill out the extra spot, we had Tom Aspinall and John Jones in play. Since there's no interim champions right now, no interim title fights at all in 2025, Dean, shout out for that. Going to change on the first pay-per-view of 2026, but for our 12th fighter, we are going to include the BMF belt this time around, Max Holloway, because it seems to be in rotation. We have a fight confirmed between him and Charles Oliveira at UFC 326. So Max Holloway and the BMF title is draft eligible this year for the people out there wondering. And yes, Dean, so here we are, the 2026 draft. I will give the floor to you. Who is your number one pick?
I'm glad you brought it up, and I'm glad you prefaced it that way. Because my number one pick is Max Holloway as the BMF.
Wow.
I think he gets past Charles Oliveira. I think he fights one more time. And the selection of people who they have to choose from for the BMF, I don't think anybody beats him.
Okay, so that was definitely lower on my list, but I like all the reasonings. I had some of that stuff in my notes. And yeah, that is the big question there is, could this thing only be on the line one time if it goes that way in the way of Max Holloway? Because what do you think? Are we looking at a title eliminator here between him and Charles Oliveira? Like, could he do the same thing?
I don't think so. I don't think it's a title eliminator. I do think that Max's pride for the BMF, I think he's going to really lean into that. I think he fights for the BMF twice this year, and I think he wins both of them. But I think, but the selection of people who he has to face from, like, he's not going to have to face Armand, who could potentially beat him. He's not going to have to face him. He's going to fight other tough guys, and I think he's the toughest of the tough guys.
And I think, too, you could be putting yourself in a good position here where if he does lose, maybe they go, hey, a trilogy fight now between Max Holloway and Charles Oliveira, and maybe they have that towards the end of the year, and Max gets a chance to get it back if he loses this fight. So
good point.
Here if it doesn't go his way. So I kind of like the hedging there. That seems to be a pretty good one. That is interesting. And you said it there, though. Who would, if he wins, that second person be? That could fight for that belt. I mean, I look at the division, maybe the winner of Dan Hooker and Benoit St. Denis, maybe Justin Gaethje if he loses to Paddy Pimblett and is kind of out of that circulation for the actual title fight. They do, a rematch between him and Max. I don't know. What do you think? Any of those sound appealing?
I'm thinking it's probably the winner of Hooker and Benoit St. Denis. If Benoit St. Denis wants to go that route, but Benoit St. Denis might want to go the route. If he wins, he might want to go the route of chasing the title, like the lightweight title. Mm-hmm. But I'm thinking that would be my pick of who they go with, the winner of Dan Hooker and Benoit St. Denis.
Fascinating. Okay. Who do you think wins this fight between Holloway and Oliveira? You obviously feel good on Holloway there.
I got Holloway in this one. I just think he's a little cleaner in these spots. And I think, he just does a good job of managing fights to win them. And he almost, with the exception of him fighting Ilya, he almost takes out the spontaneity of what can happen in fights, because he's such a good job of managing them and keeping them where he wants them and making everything so clean for him that I think he's going to be able to do that against Charles.
Historic fight between these two. I think they have a combined 47 UFC wins, which would be the most ever in a single matchup between two guys in UFC history. So pretty cool to see where they've come from in that first fight to where they are now, a pair of legends in the sports. So I love the sneaky Max Holloway pick first. Okay. I didn't see that coming, I swear. Okay. For my number one choice, I'm going to go with someone that we just recently spoke with at the tail end there, UFC middleweight champion Khamzat Chimaev. He feels like a pretty strong first place selection here on my team to lead it off. What could you say? This could go a lot of different ways. It could be because he just fights once this year. It could be because he only fights twice. I certainly don't expect him three times in all the fights that are available, presented to him in this weight class. I think he's a pretty substantial favorite in every single one of them. So if you're kind of looking at a Khamzat 2026, sounds like he's going to be out of action till after Ramadan. Hopefully we get him April, May at the latest. And then I assume maybe we see him again towards the end of the year. And I assume it would be Nassourdine Imabov, and then who, the winner of Sean Strickland and Fluffy Hernandez, probably towards the end of the year.
I like the Khamzat pick. I really do. I just didn't have him up that high, and the reason why is because I think there's a potential of him going up to 205. I see that potential, and I don't trust his judgment to stay at 185 for the whole year. So I see him actually going up to 205. So I said, I'm not gonna put him that high on my list.
Okay. Yeah. I wonder how that will all shake out. Cause he did say, I think, to Brett Okamoto recently that he wants to defend it once and then move up. And then even still kind of saying in that similar interview that he's not really keen to fight Imabov because of where they're both from. And
yeah, like, he said they were like friends.
Yeah. So this is, I don't know what to think. It's a risky one. It could be. I mean, I think if he's fighting and he's in this division, he's the clear pick, and I don't really see anyone else beating him. But yeah, I mean, we can get into it. As you said earlier, you had the hot take about, you know, Khamzat, his title reign could be a disaster for the UFC. And I mean, I'd like to give him some more time and some more saving grace, but we've already been delayed beyond, Ramadan, and little things happen. He picks up another injury. It's starting to look like almost a year.
A year, and then a couple more months, and a couple more months. And then if he gets into some beef with somebody at 205, he's going to be talking about moving up to 205. I mean, there's just a lot of different ways to go with this, which is why I just didn't trust putting him that high on my list for being champion at middleweight for the end of the year. Okay. Light heavyweight could be tough, but at middleweight. And I didn't even take that into account, but after seeing how we did last year. But I had to have him a little bit lower on my list.
Okay, who did you have at two then?
At number two.
Or for your number two.
My number two. Ilya Topuria. I got Ilya Topuria still at lightweight as the lightweight champion. I think whatever happens with Patty and Gaethje, I think Ilya comes back and he beats the winner of that and solidifies himself as the number one and the champion at lightweight. So I think Ilya Topuria is going to be the champ at lightweight.
Man, this one, as I was prepping for this, had me in a bit of a puzzle of where to take Ilya or where he could land, just because everything that's going on. I mean, he obviously has things delayed already. We don't know when he's going to be back. He's talking about, you know, the personal issues, whatever's going on with his wife and his kids. Yet he's out there at his WOW event over the weekend doing interviews with everyone and talking about this fight that was made between Paddy and Justin, how he likes it, how he is not going to be long for MMA and wants to go be in boxing. Did you see this quote today, Dean? I will read it to you.
It happened today? I didn't see it.
He said, yes, he may have been traveling. He says, I'm focused on mixed martial arts, and when I'm finished, which to be honest, I don't think will be too long from now, I'll make my transition to boxing, and I'm going to surprise more than a few people. Said that to Marca.
Man, see, you know, these guys have heavy ambitions. They're very ambitious. And I like that. But as an MMA fan, I'm just like, no, stick around. We want to see you do our thing. So I'm kind of a jealous girl when it comes to this. I want to keep him. I don't want him to go into, like, who is he going to fight in boxing is like really interesting.
No one that I even care to discuss. I mean, you could mention all the names, but I don't know what type of, you know, merit, and I don't know how many fights he has left on his UFC contract and how that would even go. You got to be free and clear if you want to really pursue your own stuff. So I don't know. Feels like a bit of a pipe dream. But again, it's interesting when you're out there talking about all this stuff when you said the reason you can't defend your title in January is because you had a lot of like things to figure out. Like, shouldn't you be off the grid and dealing with all that stuff so you can get back to where you need to be to fight?
Well, the only thing I'm thinking, it maybe in his head, again, very ambitious, maybe in his head he sees a fight between him and Terrence Crawford. Mm-hmm. But he could potentially do that in Zuffa boxing, maybe. Yeah. Which I wouldn't mind, is still under the same banner. But at the end of the day, I want to see him fighting in MMA. I think, you know, he's so great at MMA. Stick around.
Yes, of course. We want to see that. We want to see where the talent is. We've only seen, I think, 9 Ilya Topuria fights in the UFC. I need many more than that to figure out, you know, where he's going to be in terms of the greats. But yeah, we'll see when he's back. You know, Paddy Pimblett had an interesting quote recently too, where he said if Ilya's not ready to go by June or July, they could see the UFC just upgrading him to undisputed champion and kind of stripping Ilya. I mean, I don't know if that's just him poking fun, but at some point, like, the timeline's going to have to come out. So that's where I struggled. Like, if he meets the proper timeline, he's fighting Justin Gaethje or Paddy Pimblett at the White House or something in June.
I think he comes back. You know, personal issues, and all fighters go through them. And when they're hit and affected by these personal issues, it's so heavy. And Ilya's in a position where he can take this time off. Like, a lot of fighters can't. They can't take the time off and then they go out there and have bad performances, which is why it's so hard to predict fights, because we don't know what's going on in their lives. Yeah. But Ilya is doing the right thing by taking his time off. But I do think that he gets it together before and within the next couple of months. Like, if he's already out making these bold claims of going back to boxing, which means his mindset is now back in working mode, I do think he comes back sooner rather than later, especially after the Gaethje and Pimblett fight. Once he watches these guys in a cage fighting, and he's going to be thinking in his head, these dudes fighting for my belt.
Yeah.
He's going to come back.
Another interesting quote he had, I believe he told ESPN Deportes that if Justin Gaethje wins, the UFC has other plans for him, but he's not at liberty to share what those plans are. Like, I think kind of alluding to like a plan for Justin that does not involve unifying with Ilya Topuria. So I have no idea what he means by that, but this is another one of the many things he said in this mini media tour.
I don't know, man. These guys be saying some crazy stuff sometimes, right? Like, I don't know how to take it.
Let's say lightweight goes beautifully, no hiccups. Justin and Paddy fight in January. Ilya unifies with them in the summer and then has one more at the end of the year, maybe against Armin Sarukian. Say they finally do that fight, Ilya versus Armin. Are you picking Ilya to get through the year? Like, does he win two fights if he has them against these guys?
Well, I'm going to say yes. Yeah. I'm going to say yes. Right. He's my guy.
Yeah.
I think if he does, I think he wins. I think he has a good clean year. Yeah. Especially too, like when you're, and also too, like having these issues, personal issues, can motivate you in tremendous ways when you come back. So if he's having personal issues, I anticipate when he does come back for him to be on fire, just lighting people up.
Yeah, and I guess the last point on Ilya Topuria, potentially the outside unexpected factor, is there a chance you draft him in back-to-back years on your team and he's a champion, but again, in different weight classes. Maybe the crazy Ilya Topuria idea would be he's a UFC champion at the end of this year, but at welterweight.
I'm not buying that one. I don't care. Him in
Islam, you don't think this year?
No, I'm not taking that candy.
Okay. Uh-oh. There you go.
That's I actually think it'd be more likely for him to go back down to 145 before he goes up to fight Islam.
Interesting.
Really? I just don't see that. I think there's too many obstacles in the way between for him to go up to welterweight and fight Islam.
Yeah, well, we will get to 145 soon enough here. Okay, for my second team selection here, I'm going to ride with my heavyweight champion, the man who brought me closest to the promised land last year. I'm going to go with Tom Aspinall once again to end the year as heavyweight champion. Gosh, I hope he is able to be healthy enough to fight, to actually fight, does fight. I mean, hopefully there's no eye surgery, nothing that puts the career in jeopardy. These are this is a very hopeful analysis of Tom Aspinall. But yeah, if he's active, healthy, and can fight, I think he figures out any of the things that may have gone wrong in the brief moments he had with Cyril Gane, probably wins that rematch. And then who the hell knows what could come after that. Like it falls off a pretty far cliff. I mean, best case scenario, he fights John Jones or Alex Pereira or something, but more realistically, he fights Waldo Cortez Acosta or Derek Lewis.
Could you imagine? Oh, that's so crazy. Hey, I like that for number three.
Yeah.
That was actually my original number three.
That's like your next guy. He would have been your
He would have been my next guy. And I like that. Because I think so, all the speculation on Tom, which is completely unfair and unfounded and unbiased, or you know, just unbased, right? So people made all these speculations out here. Tom tried to get out of the fight. The reality is all these people that are saying these things don't have a lot of personal relationships with fighters, so they don't know them. So they're basing what they probably would have done if they were in that situation.
Yeah.
So I have a lot of, I mean, I've been having relationships with fighters for like 30 years. I have a lot of relationships with a lot of different type of fighters. And I know the type of fighter that Tom is. I think Tom knew that was going to be a tough fight. I think he went and he was taking his time. It may not have been going his way. It was the first round. But I think Tom was eventually going to come back. I think he kind of anticipated this. I thought Tom was going to come back in that fight. Mm-hmm. And I say this only because I like the pick. Because I still believe that Tom is the best heavyweight in the world. Now, a lot of people have written him off because they thought he tried to get out of the fight or he wasn't winning the first round, and they wrote him off. I believe he was not winning that first round, but he was okay with that because he knew it was going to be a tough fight. I still believe that Tom Aspinall is going to be heavyweight champion at the end of the year, just like you do.
Yeah, agreed. We'll see what happens in the rematch. But again, if he continued on, he loses that fight. It wasn't a fair fight after that foul occurred. So we'll see it next time. And hopefully it's a fair fight from beginning to end and we find out who the better man is. But I like his chances. And yeah, I mean, anything on the back half of the year, do we even address John Jones? Do we even address the idea of Alex Pereira at heavyweight? Or is this just exhausted talking points when it comes to these guys?
I think it's kind of exhausting. I need more evidence. I need much more evidence to believe that a John Jones, Alex Pereira thing is a real consideration. I need a lot more evidence.
Yeah, we'll see what happens. Dana White said they're going to start matchmaking the White House card come February. So we'll see if John Jones has done anything to change his fortunes, but it doesn't seem like it. So I don't know what to say about this anymore, but I also wouldn't be surprised if he ends up on that card. So everything still feels in play. We'll see what happens. Okay, Dean, who's your number three pick for your team?
Here? I'm going Valentina.
Oh, stealing Valentina from me. You picked no women's champions last year. You had none on your team. Here we go.
I didn't. Oh my goodness.
I mean, I think just got to them before you, or it's just the way the order worked out with your people. But yeah, I ended up having all three on my team.
Yeah, I'm going Valentina. The talent pool currently doesn't look strong enough right now for me to believe that anyone can beat her next year. Mm-hmm. Especially if Valentina only fights maybe once or twice. The talent pool doesn't look strong enough to me. I think the best chances are Natalia Silva, but I think Valentina's smart enough to figure her out because she comes from a striking background and she's a diverse enough striker to figure out what Natalia does well, strip her of that, get her to the ground and beat her. I think Macy Barber has an opportunity, but again, Valentina's experience and her IQ will nullify it. So as of right now, I don't think there's anyone in the division that can beat Valentina in the next year.
Agreed. Yeah, we will see if Natalia Silva can solidify a title shot against Rose Namajunas at UFC 324. Huge chance for her there. But yeah, unless Valentina decides to vacate and goes up or something, which I think is a scenario in play. I mean, she talked a little bit about fighting maybe the winner of Amanda Nunes and Kayla Harrison, maybe even at the White House. I know that's something Kayla floated out there at one point. So that would be my fear for her. Maybe just biting off a little more than you can chew up a weight class. But if she's here and defending, and I like her chances. And it's fascinating. Valentina is close to clearing out this division twice over, right? Two separate reigns. She did it the first time, and she gets a title defense or two this year. And it's going to be huge in 2026. So she's special.
Yeah. She's made me put my foot in my mouth so many times. I thought Whaley was going to beat her. Didn't happen. So I got to give her her props.
This episode of the Bonfire Podcast is brought to you by MyBookie. Sure, the UFC schedule is over for 2025, but sports are not on hold. Plenty of NFL, NBA action, and more over the Christmas break and holiday break between UFC events. So make sure to use MyBookie for all your sporting needs. Use the code word BON for a special first-time player bonus. That is BOHN. They will give you a nice welcome if you use that reference code. And make sure to use MyBookie for all of your sports betting needs, and make sure to gamble responsibly. Okay, props to Valentina. Yeah, she is your number three pick there. Okay, I'm surprised this man is still on the board this far into the draft, so I'm going to snatch him up now before it's too late. UFC welterweight champion Islam Makhachev is my choice here for the third draft pick on my team. This is one where it's a little scary because welterweight is so freaking good and there's so many good guys right there, so many interesting fighters and challenges, but I guess this speaks to how highly we think of Islam Makhachev and what I think he's capable of, that he would still be this high in the draft. Title defense number one for the year, if that's Kamaru Usman, which seems like everyone in the world besides the fans largely is pushing for it to happen, so I think it may be. And then the second one of the year would be a little more worrisome. It could be a Shavkat. It could be a Michael Morales. It could be a Carlos Prochez or one of these dangerous Ian Garry younger guys. But with Islam's skill set and his determination and the Habib corner team and all them, the IQ, there's no one who I think is going to be a favorite over him going into a title fight in 2026. So I'll go with my guy, Islam Makhachev. I like his chances.
Not a bad pick. I like his chances too. He was close. I was getting around to him eventually. I was getting around to him.
Yeah, he was going soon, so I needed to get him off there.
Yeah, you got
to
get him now. But no, I think Islam has a really good shot of being the champ at the end of the year too. Like, a lot of things can shake out. You just never know. But Islam has a solid chance of being champion at the end of the year.
Do you like this Kamaru Usman fight? Are you yay or nay on it?
I was talking to Josh Thompson about it, and I was all in on it just because of, I understand the direction that the UFC is trying to go, and I agree with the direction that they're going. In order for us to stay working, in order for us to have jobs, we need to have the biggest, most sellable fights, whether we agree with them or not in terms of meritocracy or not. And in terms of selling a fight for Islam Makhachev, Kamaru Usman on paper might be the best guy for him to fight next, because he's the guy who Dana said is the greatest welterweight champion of all time. He's had this long run as welterweight champion, and on paper, it's the easiest way to sell it than to try to create some new monster for Islam. So I can see them doing that. So I'm actually okay with the fight.
It is interesting because I don't know who we're selling it to at this point, right? Like, does Kamaru Usman bring in that significant of a fan interest than the people who are captivated in a Michael Morales with his market and, you know, the Spanish language area and all that stuff? Like, these guys have different perks with them. I feel like if you're going and signing up for ESPN or for Paramount Plus and putting your money down, like, you're enough of a fan where you know all of these guys probably pretty well anyways. So what excites you more in that regard? Is Kamaru the most exciting option to those fans? I don't know. I don't know the answers to these parts.
Well, I mean, but the reality is that even if I'm assuming that if they put Kamaru Usman in that spot, they're expecting Islam to win. Mm-hmm. And it would look great on Islam's resume that he beat such a long-standing champion.
To break and, the record.
Right. So by doing that, you're not knocking off of Morales. Right away, at least. Like you can still have time to increase the exposure for Morales and Hamza, or not Hamza, but what's his name? Yeah, no. The other one from Uzbek.
Shavkat Rakhmonov.
Shavkat. So yeah, like you still have time to build their reputation and build their exposure while Islam and Usman do their thing. So you get some time to build Morales, give him another fight if he's that guy. Give Shavkat a fight if he's that guy. Get them some exposure from some new fans and then make the fight happen. But in terms of Usman, like he already has the credentials. Mm-hmm. So just go ahead and throw him in there.
Yeah, it's a tricky one. We'll see what they do. I feel like everyone who's against this fight is kind of swimming against the current. So I feel like it's ultimately going to be the one we get to. And it seems like they already at least explored it. Ali Abdelaziz told me that Islam was offered or discussed offers against either Usman or Ian Garry for the first Paramount card at UFC 324, and Habib did not like the quick turnaround, so they shut that down. Mm-hmm. And they also didn't want to have him on the same card as Umar again.
Right. I could see how that's a problem.
Yeah, so that didn't work out perfectly last time, but yeah, Islam, I think a good choice for Team Bond here. Okay, Dean, who's the fourth pick on your team here?
I'm going Petr Yan. I'm stealing Petr Yan. I think he looked so good last weekend that I almost don't know if Marab could get it back. I almost don't know if he can. So I'm going to side with for this. And plus, you know, we're getting to the bottom end. So sure. I got to side with Petr Yan is able to keep it. And if he can beat, if he's better than Marab, I don't know who beats him.
Yep. I was thinking the same. I wanted to put him a little higher. I was debating taking him last time, but you got him off the board there. I agree. I think a third fight based off what we saw there is pretty tough to sway in the way of Marab. So we'll see if they even do it. I mean, there's a lot of scenarios that can break here at bantamweight. This is one of the most fascinating weight classes to start 2026. Marab claims that UFC said they would give him the trilogy fight, take the time that you need. That's what we're going to do for you. He said that. I haven't heard it from, you know, Dana or anyone in that regard, but you have Sean O'Malley fighting Song Yadong at UFC 324. He seems to think he could be right there for the shot if he wins. You got Umar Nurmagomedov on that card against Davidson Figueiredo. So both of those guys can be real options. I assume they're not going to book anything until we see UFC 324 play out and how these fights go. But what do you think? If you're Marab here, are you a little bit scared too that you might not get this fight next?
No, I don't. I think Marab's going to get the fight next. I really do believe Marab's going to get the fight next. I think they kind of owe it to him. I think the UFC feels, I think they owe it to Marab to give, because Marab didn't even have to take that fight. Mm-hmm. It almost felt like Marab was doing them a favor by taking a fight at the end of the year. And Marab's a dog. I'm sure he didn't look at it as like, oh, I'm doing him a favor. Marab wanted the fight. But yeah. I'm sure when the UFC, when Marab was like, yeah, I'll fight it. I'll fight in the last show. I'm sure the UFC was like, Now we don't have to worry about, you know, booking a headliner. Marab will do it. Yeah. So I think that the UFC will give this one back to Marab. I think they'll give him the shot, regardless of what happens with O'Malley and Umar. I think they're going to give Marab the opportunity.
Well, based off what we said there and how that third fight goes, is that a good idea? I mean, if you're Team Marab, like, is that something you think about? Of course, we know a million times you don't turn down a title fight, you don't turn down opportunities, blah blah blah. But like, are you putting yourself at a disservice and a disadvantage? Because if you lose twice to Yan, like, then you're in a very tough spot.
Yeah, you're in a really tough spot, but Marab's not built that way. Yeah, Marab's not built. Marab's not built in a way where he thinks, if I lose twice to this guy, he's built in a way where he's thinking, I'm going to get it back. Okay, he got me that time. He's thinking, okay, he got me that time. I might have been a little tired. I might be a little unprepared, but he got me that time. But I'm going to get it back. And I'm sure he'll have to talk it over with John Wood and the rest of his team about what they did wrong and what they can change and do differently. I don't know what I would do differently for Merab because I don't know Merab like that. So when you hear John Wood talk about it, he knows Merab. So I'm sure that when they go back and analyze the fight, they'll say, man, we should have did this differently. I just don't know what they could have done differently based on what I think of Merab's skill set. So, but I'm sure they do know. So they're going to have to figure that out.
Yeah, we'll see what they can cook up there for a trilogy. It would be interesting to see how that would go. I'm not sure for Merab. Like, I guess you're maybe not in too bad of a spot. Maybe I'm talking myself out of it. Because say you do lose to him and then Jan loses the belt to O'Malley or Umar, you beat both of those guys and you're probably right back there for a shot at the new champion after that. So you just got to wait for Jan, I guess, to lose the belt to someone else because you beat all the other guys. So.
And that's also, that might be a strategy for Merab to let Jan fight one of them other guys to see how that shakes out.
Well, do you think so? Say we get that fight first half of the year, the trilogy, Jan versus Merab 3, Jan wins, second fight of the year. Who's the bigger threat and what's the fight you'd want to see more? Jan versus O'Malley 2 or Jan versus Nurmagomedov, which that would be like huge for Abu Dhabi, that part of the world. That'd be a big fight, I think.
I think Umar's the bigger threat. I do. I think Umar's the bigger threat. He's a little bit more complete. He's got he's the bigger threat than O'Malley.
But not the bigger fight. Or I guess it depends where it goes.
Yeah. I guess that depends where it goes. Like, I mean, if you're doing it at the White House, I mean.
Yeah, Sean O'Malley fighting is a bigger fight at the White House. Yeah. But Umar versus Jan and Abu Dhabi in October. Yeah. Like, that'd be a big deal there.
That's a really big deal.
Yeah.
For that part. I mean, could you imagine like being in Abu Dhabi during a fight like that?
Yeah, I was talking to Usman Nurmagomedov a few days ago, who interestingly enough said he has two fights left on his PFL contract. So fingers crossed. I mean, I'd love to see that guy in the UFC, but he was saying like in Russia, Dagestan, Jan versus Umar would be a super big deal. So I could be in play. So yeah, bantamweight, definitely one to watch for 2026. And you got Piotr Jan there, maybe making it through the year. So my next choice, a little bit surprised he's still on the board here, just given the nature of his weight class. I'm going to go with UFC light heavyweight champion, Alex Pereira. I think he is the guy here. I mean, light heavyweight's pretty grim, man. So unless he leaves the division and goes up to heavyweight and vacates finally after all these years of talk, I think he probably wins these fights. I mean, Carlos Alberg, I would assume, is going to be first up here if he stays at 205. They were discussing that for the first Paramount card. Didn't come to be. Then after that, you know, what are we looking at? We're looking at a Yuri Prohazka trilogy. We're looking at Azamat Mirzakhanov on the rise. We're looking at Bogdan Guskov on the rise. And then maybe a trilogy with Magomed Ankalaev. But I do not think the UFC is going to be rushing to put that one together.
I'll be honest with you, Alex was my next guy too.
Okay, yeah.
And I had him here, but my reservations about putting him any higher than this were weight class. Alex Pereira has had this unique and special career. I've been talking to my fighters about this. Like, sometimes, like, if you're not built for championship level fighting, just be a hell of a prize fighter. And be a hell of a prize fighter and make all the money you can. Alex Pereira has had this unique ability to do both simultaneously. To be a hell of a prize fighter and make all the money and also be a championship level fighter. Not everybody can do that. Mm-hmm. He has the ability to do that, which is why him kind of fluctuating in between weight classes makes sense for him. And I think the older he gets, the less he's going to want to cut weight. So the reason why I don't have him higher on my list is because I just think he's going to be a heavyweight by the end of the year.
Yeah, it finally happens, you think. What do they do to introduce him, do you think, to this weight class? I mean, is it right into a title fight with Aspinall if he beats Gone? Does this John Jones fight happen, which I'm starting to get the tinglies that it might actually come to fruition? I don't know. But those things seem in play.
Alex Pereira also has the unique ability to be the A side strong enough to where the B side doesn't matter anymore.
Alexander Volkov or something.
Yeah. Like you could put an Alex Pereira against anybody and it's like, yo, it's must see TV. You got to watch it because it's Alex Pereira. Like he has that ability now. But, and think about that. Like this time last year, you couldn't have said that about him. Or was it last year or was it the year? Whatever. Like before UFC 300, like you couldn't have said that about him.
Yeah.
But after UFC 300 And then 303 he did?
Yep.
Where it was like,
and then 307.
And then he became the star that it really didn't matter the opponent.
Well, he saved that. I think he saved that big time with the winning the belt back. If he had lost badly to Ankalaev again, I think he maybe loses a little bit of that. But
yeah,
the doors are open for him. I mean, rumors out there of Rico Verhoeven being a free agent. God, give me Alex Pereira versus Rico Verhoeven at heavyweight. Like, that would be insane.
That'd be crazy. That'd be a way to introduce him to heavyweight. But that's him being a prize fighter.
Yes.
And not fighting as a championship level guy. That's him fighting as a prize fighter. And he can do that, win that fight, and then fight for the title next. Like, that's the unique and special place that Alex Pereira has put himself in.
Yep. So it's tricky. We're at the point of the list here where we're almost making, you know, the argument more of why they're not going to keep it, why they are, but this is the inherent way it goes. I mean, these are the people that are being drafted last. So I had to go somewhere, and I had Alex at number 4 on my team. Okay, Dean, only 4 remaining champions, 4 people left. Who's number 5 on your team here?
I have, who do I have? Mackenzie Dern next.
Wow.
Mackenzie Dern.
Okay. I think she was going to go lower.
I think with Whaley coming back, potentially coming back, I think with Whaley potentially coming back, she's a threat to everybody else in the division. And then selfishly, you know, we got robbed of an opportunity this weekend with Jillian Robertson, but our goal was to beat Amanda Lemos and then hopefully fight Mackenzie Dern. That was our goal for Jillian Robertson, to try to steal that belt from her. So when I look at Mackenzie Dern, I'm just looking at between what my intentions are with Jillian and then Whaley John, there's no way she's going to be champ by the end of the year.
Yeah, that's why I'm surprised you took her in this spot. I thought there, you know, you might go with one of the other remaining, Kayla Harrison, Joshua Van, or Volkanovski, but it's okay. Those people will still be to come, but yeah, it's all sound there. We'll see where she goes. Tatiana Suarez could be a threat out there, but that's a grappling heavy matchup most likely, and you can't count out Mackenzie Dern anywhere in there if the fight goes that way. So yeah, we'll see how it goes. Could be grim though, and yeah, man, we didn't bring it up at the very top of the show because I knew we'd be getting this at some point, but feel gutted for Jillian that happened at the last minute. Seems like it was a weird thing. I mean, we saw the comments Lemos made that what she had like a pimple on her lip or something going on, and the commission wouldn't clear. The fight is rebooked for March 14th, though.
Yeah, the fight's rebooked for March 14th, but I'm not sure what it was. I thought maybe it was a cold sore or something, but I mean, hopefully she's healthy and we can get it rebooked.
Yeah. As the coach, you're always planning to, you know, coach the fighters in the cage, coach them to victory. But I'm sure when a moment like that happens, right, it has to bring out a different side of your coaching and caregiving for those fighters. Is that like a really hard moment to kind of guide Jillian through?
It is, because everything that happens, and we spoke about this, like everything that happens in this game is all about timing. Yeah, and when you're ready to fight, and then, you know, like the plan was, let's win this fight and then call out Mackenzie. Now that's stripped, you know, like we're in my head, I'm thinking you can beat Amanda Lemos in December. The fight is they have a fight in April in Miami, probably, you know, and they always do Miami in April. Yeah. You might be able to get Mackenzie Dern in April. So like now that's robbed. So, and then, you know, it's just a kind of a wasted camp now. It's just, yeah. So there's just, you know, it's a lot of recalibrating of what we need to do in order to get right back where we were. So
yeah, it's tough, man. Well, these things happen in MMA, as Gus Johnson once
said. But it's not, listen, it's not unique to me. It's not unique to my team. It's with everybody, which is why MMA is such a difficult sport to be a part of. It's just, you just ride the wave and hope you catch a break.
Yep. Okay. Here we go for my 5th pick on my team. I'm going with featherweight champion Alexander Volkanovski. Tough one here. We don't really know what his future looks like beyond UFC 325, where he rematches Diego Lopez of Jan 31st. He claims going nowhere. He's doing this. He plans to defend once or twice more this year. He wants to be, you know, the old Volk, put together a real run here. So that gives you a little bit of hopefulness of what could come. But I know when we reacted to the announcements of those title fights a few weeks ago, we did not love his chances of winning this fight and think that Lopez could make some adjustments in the rematch. So I don't know. These are hard fights, but I don't want to count out one of the greats, the great, as his nickname is. And yeah, he had to go somewhere. I mean, he's the second to last pick on my team, so not a ton of confidence, but I would not be shocked if we were at year's end and you told me he beat Diego Lopez and Lerone Murphy, and that was his 2026. I would be shocked.
I don't know. Well, you know, Volk has always impressed me. Volk has always been able to pull off things that you didn't expect him to. Like the fact that he was able to rebound after losing twice to Islam and still come back and beat Diego Lopez, that, you know, so like that was impressive in itself. Mm-hmm. So you never can count a guy out who has that much confidence and belief in himself. But he's got a tough road ahead of him for sure. It's gonna be a tough road ahead of him. Sure, yeah.
These are not easy fights. Featherweight's growing, no. But
I mean, just that featherweight division is looking stronger and stronger. I mean, Movsar is still out there lurking, waiting for his opportunity. And I mean, when you got guys like Kevin Vachejos who knocked out Giga last night, he's not even ranked. You're just like, man, you know, this is a really tough division.
Yeah, very tough. Other contenders that are, you know, Serge and Aljamain Sterling's there. Yair Rodriguez always hanging around. Yusuf Zalal's on a nice run. So, yeah, there's fights to be made, and we'll see who comes out at the top of the heap for featherweight. I would not be surprised if we got, like, multiple title changes, right? I could see a world where Diego beats Volk and then Movsar beats Diego again or something. So this could be one of those ones that moves around a little bit, or maybe it stays put. Okay, Deed, close out your team here with your sixth pick. There's two champions left on the board. Are you taking Kayla Harrison or are you taking Joshua Van?
I'll take Joshua Van.
Okay.
I'm going to take Joshua Van.
Understandably so, which we will get to shortly here. But yes, give me the case for Joshua Van to make it through the year or why he may be under threat.
He still has good punching power. So he still has the ability to knock guys out, but he's talk about a killer's row ahead of him. The flyweight division has never been this heavy.
Yeah, it's hot.
It's never been this heavy. Mm-hmm. What Manel Kopp did last night was crazy. What Tatsuro Taira did last weekend, insane. What Kyoji Horiguchi did the weekend before, crazy. So I think, and here's the weird part about all this. Joshua Van might be my favorite fighter in the UFC right now. And I don't think he's the best in the division, but he's my favorite fighter.
And he'll get the opportunity to prove it. We hope. I was waiting for a curveball where you were going to pull the Marab and be like, I think he's not going to be the champion, but he's going to beat Pantoja in the rematch and then lose. But we'll see if we even get that. I don't know how this is all.
I don't know. I don't think he gets Pantoja. I don't think he fights Pantoja again.
Really?
Yeah. I think Pantoja might be out for a little longer. I think Pantoja might be out for a little longer. And I think he's going to have to fight. I think they're going to put Manel Kopp in there.
I could see it. I mean, I don't know if you're saying that with any, you know, insight or anything, but I think the fact that we're here as of now and we're recording, this could change by the time you guys hear this, but like there's no clear medical update. No, I need surgery. I don't. What's the timeline? Like it's been well over a week since the fight with Pantoja and Van, and we still don't know exactly what happened to Pantoja, how bad it was, all these things. So that worries me a little bit.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like no one knows the extent of the damage.
Yeah.
So no one knows, like if it's been a week and we don't even know what the damage is, like why don't we know what the damage is? Mm-hmm. Like that, it can't be like, yeah, we can't find out what the damage is. And then, oh, you know what? It's just a little sprain. Get back in there. I doubt that's the case.
So when you say you don't think they fight again, does that, you think we would probably get Van versus Kopp or Taira and they beat him. And then when Pantoja is healthy, he's back and challenges.
Yeah. I think that's the situation. I think for Pantoja to fight Van again, it'll have to be like down the road somewhere in a, like an obscure fight where everything has been shaken off and those are the two guys left. but I don't see that happening. I think that was a weird one-off type fight that just happened that got Van the title. And I will say this too. I'm glad he celebrated, you know? You know, a lot of people was like, oh, he shouldn't celebrate. I'm like, yo, listen. I mean, he didn't celebrate Pantoja getting hurt. He celebrated himself winning the title. If you can get your hands on a UFC title, I don't care how you get it. I don't care how you get it. Celebrate it, because it don't come often. But I just don't see him ever fighting Pantoja again. I think he's going to fight Manel Kopp next. And I don't think that's a fight he can win.
Yeah, fascinating. This division is unbelievable right now. Yeah, we got Kopp and Tyra there. They announced that Horiguchi is going to be fighting Albazi coming up here in February. Brandon Moreno is booked for the UFC Mexico headliner against Almabayev. So a lot going on here at flyweight. Man, what a time for this division to end and be in such a spotlight. ESPN era starts with Henry Cejudo kind of saving it against Dillashaw and ends with kind of the full form, someone like Manel Kopp shining there. So yeah, good stuff at 125. Okay, I will close out the championship draft. I alluded to the only person left there on the board. It is Kayla Harrison on my team. And this one, I truly did struggle with, just because there's so many ways this thing could break. Prelude, obviously, you are a coach of Amanda Nunes. We'll be guiding her through the camp leading up to this fight with Kayla Harrison at UFC 324. But it just seems like a steep climb. I mean, even, and I'll say this to you, if you liked your chances of winning this fight in January, I feel like, and I don't know whether it'll be or not, there's probably a rematch coming after that. So to tell me you have to beat Amanda Nunes twice in 1 year, that feels like a very, very tough task. So even if she wins the first one, maybe she loses the second one, or vice versa. I don't know. It just feels like a tricky spot for Kayla Harrison. But if she does get through this, everything beyond that, I like her chances. I mean, number two is Raquel Pennington. Number three is Norma Dumont. Number four is Ketlin Vieira. Number five is Yana Santos. Number six is Irene Aldana. Number seven, Macy Chiasson. And number eight, Aline Perez. I mean, Kayla Harrison's probably minus 500 against all those ladies. So,
yeah, that's what a weird position for her to be in. Yeah. And especially like for her to be this last pick, because outside of Amanda, like, she just steamrolls everybody. But I just can't see her getting past Amanda. And not only because I'm working with Amanda, it's just I know fighting. You know, I just can't see her getting past Amanda.
Yeah, and it's, yeah, I mean, you're of course biased in this conversation too.
Yeah, I'm trying to keep it balanced. Yeah.
That's fine. I'd expect you to be, and I picked her to go low. In my 112, I had her at 10. So she wasn't too far off. I had Mackenzie Dern and Joshua Van below her. So it shaked out kind of as I thought it would. But yeah, this one's tricky, head and shoulders above everyone else. But you got one of the greatest fighters standing in front of you. So yeah.
Here's the thing. Like, if she gets past Amanda, she'll never lose again.
Well, dude, what a year she could have. Imagine she beats Amanda and then there is no rematch. And, you know, Valentina moves up. If she could get the scalp of Amanda Nunes and Valentina Shevchenko in 1 year, that would be massive for her. And legacy-wise, Ronda Rousey, the talks are still existing of that. We've discussed that before, but it seems like there's some marquee fights on there. But yeah, if she ends up fighting anyone else there, those ranked names I mentioned, almost feels like a different sport compared to these other ones.
Yeah, but again, it's all predicated on her getting past Amanda, which I just don't see.
Yeah. Well, there you go. That's it, Dean. That is our championship draft. To recap quickly here, Dean had on his team Max Holloway, Ilya Topuria, Valentina Shevchenko, Piotr Jan, Mackenzie Dern, Joshua Van. I have Khamzat Chimaev, Tom Aspinall, Islam Makhachev, Alex Pereira, Alexander Volkanovski, and Kayla Harrison there. I feel like it's a little more even. I think we said last year, you know, if our two teams met in an alley or something, I was feeling pretty scared for my side, but I feel like it's a little more balanced now.
We got some balance now. I'm interested in seeing what happens next year. I wish we could just fast forward.
We got a lot of fights to get through. This is going to be a landscape changing year for the sport. Potentially. We'll see how different things are in the Paramount era. I'm going to throw you one bonus question, Dean, in case somehow this breaks where it ends up being like 6-6 or there's some sort of tiebreaker we need. So I'll throw this question to you for a prediction. At this time next year, who is going to be the number one ranked male pound for pound fighter in the UFC's rankings. What do you think on that? It is currently number one, Islam Makhachev, number two, Ilya Topuria, number three, Khamzat Chimaev, number four, Alex Pereira, number five, Alexander Volkanovski, number six, Piotr Jan, and number seven, Tom Aspinall. Who's going to be number one?
I'm going to go with Ilya Topuria.
Okay, I'm going to go with Islam Makhachev. I think it stays as is.
You're going to keep it.
Yeah. That could be a decider for us there if things go down to the wire. So we'll see how much that list changes as well, because that evolved a lot. I think there was three different number one pound for pounds this year. So crazy times, Dean. Okay, man. I appreciate you so much. That brings it to a close. What are you doing over this little break that we have here between events?
I'm still working, man. I'm actually working the CFFC grappling, BJJ, CFFC, right. BJJ, and then the next day after that, I'm going to Japan for Ryzen. And then
are you cornering someone? Or?
I'm cornering Shorty Torres.
Okay. Yep.
Ryzen. And then I'm going, and then but in January, back in camp with Amanda to finish off the last couple of weeks before she fights Kayla Harrison.
Awesome, Dean. Well, so you'll be in Japan for New Year's.
I'll be, and this is like my third time being in Japan for New Year's. It's always a great time in Japan for New Year's. At the airport, they serve sake.
Hell yeah. Yeah, that's iconic. I mean, if you're following the history of MMA, like New Year's in Japan, I mean, you could do a whole other show about the history behind that. So that's pretty cool. You get to do that. All right. I hope it's a good Christmas, New Year's. Appreciate your time as always, Dean. We will definitely be back with something to start the year, but I hope everyone enjoys this and our championship draft, and leave your thoughts on who has the better team between me and Dean here. Appreciate your time, Dean. I'm going to take a quick break and be right back to wrap things up. That does it for another edition of the Bonfire Podcast. Thank you so much to Dean for getting back on here, doing that draft once more. That was a lot of fun going down that memory lane there, seeing how we did in 2025, making our choices for 2026. I think I feel a little bit better about my team this year than I did last year. We'll see how it all shakes out, of course. So many twists and turns come with this sport, so not many made it through 2025. We'll see if 2026 sees a similar rate of UFC title turnover, or if some more champions can start laying their routes and putting together a more dominant, lengthier title reign. So big questions around UFC titles to come in 2026. And that was a very, very fun preview of what we can expect in all of the weight classes there. So thank you to Dean. Thank you to my man, Kamikaze, Abby Subban, as always, for producing this show. As I said off the top, you guys are listening to this, I'm probably on a beach somewhere enjoying my honeymoon. So we have something very, very cool planned for my return, a huge episode right around Christmas time. And it's going to be something pretty special. I'm working hard on delivering a pretty cool show for you guys. So that's the most I will say is in terms of previewing that. And that pretty much does it here. Once again, please make sure to support the show in any way you can. And until next week, we'll see you all back here by the bonfire.